Etihad stared past the hard-faced platoon aiming at him, watching their comrades who were still filing into the plaza. A gentle drizzle of ripe blossoms was drifting down around them like a dry pink snow. "I can't fight both sides," he said.
"Just blast a lot of them with the water," Maxon said. "Anything that'll stop the shooting."
"I'm not sure there's enough here," Etihad said, giving Cloud Canal a miserable look.
"Air, then," Cansine said. "Can you use air? Hit them with a hurricane?"
"Well, probably." A pistol shot rang out. All four of them instinctively recoiled from the terrible, distinctive noise. The platoon were glancing over their shoulders, becoming dangerously stressed.
"Oh, screw this lot," Etihad growled. "We don't have time." Another shot sounded.
Etihad pulled an enormous column of water out of the canal beside the platoon. In the distance he heard, "Militiamen, take aim!" Lieutenant Eustace shrank down from the water as it began to curve over the canal path. His platoon started to combine their third hands to ward it off. Etihad let the enormous weight fall free.
"Fire!"
The air thundered with the power of 250 revolvers fired together down Berthold Street and Jankel Lane.
"No!"
Etihad yelled in horror. His churning waterfall sent a dozen platoon members skidding off the path, scrabbling for a hold as they went over the edge into the canal.
"Fire!"
A second volley crashed out.
"Keep them off me,"
Etihad told his friends. Maxon and Dinley immediately started hammering the struggling, drenched platoon soldiers into Cloud Canal. Cansine's third hand snatched revolvers from those who had the presence of mind to take aim on the water walker. High above Berthold Street, a wide cylinder of air started to spin. Tales of twisters had always been one of Etihad's childhood bedtime favorites. He always regretted never having actually seen the phenomena. Now, he squeezed for all he was worth. The air thickened, turning dark as it let out a tortured screech. A gyrating finger wormed its way out of the bottom, heading down towards the plaza. One of the sodden platoon members managed to fire a shot at Etihad. Dinley saw it coming, his third hand pushing the soldier's gun arm aside. The bullet went wide, and Dinley physically punched the man to the ground. Lieutenant Eustace jumped on Dinley, and all three slipped on the wet path, going down in a thrashing heap. Another soldier leapt on. Every petal of blossom in the plaza took to the air, a solid pink cloud that mushroomed over the nearby rooftops. The twister touched the pile of blazing furniture blocking Berthold Street. Flaming wreckage lifted effortlessly into the sky, swirling round and round the howling column. 200 feet above the city, the chunks broke free, slung out sideways from the expanding wind. Militiamen and rioters alike ran for their lives, as heavy, burning chairs and benches and tables began their fast drop back to the ground. Two soldiers jumped on Cansine. She pivoted as they carried her along, sending herself and one of them over the edge of the canal to plunge beneath the water. Etihad shifted the tip of the twister along the ground and steered it into the barricade at the bottom of Jankel Lane. As one collection of burning debris descended, so another fountained upwards. Lieutenant Eustace scrambled up out of the scrum that had Dinley pinned down. Maxon faced him, his smile turning feral.
"Don't know what you're so upset over. Our whole dormitory agreed she's crap in bed."
Eustace roared in fury as he rushed Maxon. Etihad let go of the air he'd shaped just before his strength gave out. In front of him, the three remaining soldiers from the platoon were gathering together as Maxon and Eustace grappled like wrestling serpents on the slippery path.
"Go!"
Maxon yelled. Etihad walked forward, his cloak undulating behind him. The trembling soldiers got off a couple of shots, which the water walker never even seemed to notice. They flattened themselves against the wall of the canal-side houses as he passed them, rigid in fearful expectation. When Etihad reached the plaza, the regiment was starting to regroup. Several officers yelled a challenge to him, which he ignored. Orders were shouted and long-talked, trying to get the ranks reformed and take aim on the figure in the black billowing cloak. A shower of tiny petals fell softly back to earth. Etihad stood at the head of Berthold Street, seeing people peer timidly out of the doorways and alleys where they dodged the rain of furniture.
"Move!" he bellowed at them. "If you stay here, the militia will kill you, and if I catch you, it'll go even worse on your soul."
They started to run, just a few at first. Then the water walker advanced down the street. He raised his arm and lightning streamed from his fingers to claw at the denuded espalier trees. The stampede began. Dozens were pelting for safety ahead of the terrible figure they feared the most. His farsight showed him people on the move all across Sampaloc. The crowds who minutes before had been secured in their domination of the streets were heading for the last refuge, Vice's mansion. Ediard almost faltered as he drew level with the first body. It was a woman who'd taken 3 bullets. Tiny petals drifted down to settle on her bloody clothes. His farsight examined the area around her, to find her soul hovering above the corpse. "I'm so sorry," he told her. "I should have been quicker." Her spectral figure was despondent as she looked at him. "My boys? What about my boys? They're so young." "They will be taken care of, I promise." "I will see them before I go," she said, and began to drift towards a nearby alley. "I can feel them close. One last look, to be sure." Ediard grimaced and carried on. In total, he counted 15 dead, with over 20 hobbling along in front of him, clutching at their wounds, blood dripping onto the pavement. He directed his long talk at them, whispering that they should turn down side alleys where doctors would come. Some obeyed. 8 didn't. Owen's long talk found him as he was halfway down Berthold Street. "I don't know what you think you can achieve by this. Stand aside and let the militia deal with this scum. I'll see to it that the commission is sympathetic to the part you played today." "The lady's miracle," Ediard replied, not caring that the rest of the city could sense his long talk. "Excuse me?" "The lady performed a miracle in Macathran once, and I'm going to repeat it today." "You are beyond salvation, Water Walker." "Then let me be." "I can't do that." Echoing down the street came the command, "Regiment, forward march!" "Wanna bet?" Ediard muttered under his breath. Then, "Boyd, I hope you're watching this. It's your lady-damned idea." He slowed his walk slightly, making sure that those fleeing into the mansion would have time to reach it before he did. Behind him, the regiment pressed on down the street. They matched his own pace, maintaining the distance perfectly. That caused him to grin. "Ediard," Selrana's unnervingly accurate long talk said to him alone, "what have you become?" "I am what I have always been. The strength, yes, but this arrogance, this is something new." "They gave me no choice." "Ediard, you are acting against the wishes of the whole city. Stop this. Today has to end with the gangs destroyed and banished. Nothing else matters anymore. What you are doing is wrong. You are claiming all responsibility. You are abusing your gifts to defy the council itself." "Long ago, Ra used his strength to gift people sanctuary from chaos. I can do nothing less with my gift, my strength. To fail now would be to betray everything he founded, all that he gave this world." "Don't you dare invoke Ra. You are not Ra." "I know, but I will not let his wonderful legacy wither and die. That is who I am. Accept that. I will pray to the lady for the light that was once your beautiful soul." Ediard ground his teeth together. He wrenched his attention away from his childhood friend. "I cannot let this distract me. She will not, and not everyone doubts me." As if seeking a counter to Salrana's dreadful mistrust, Ediard's directed long talk sought out Felax, who was still on the Midpool concourse. "I could do with some help." "Yes, sir," Felax said proudly. "Of course I'll help." The boy's unswerving trust was humbling. "I need you and others you can rely on to run to the senior sergeants at each bridge. Tell them the Water Walker needs the Farsight teams to keep tracking the 100, and in addition, to find as many of those named on the exclusion warrants as they can. Also, if this goes our way, I'll need the arrest teams to reform. They'll be wanted for escort duties."
"Yes, sir. I'll do that right away. But, sir, I want to help you. I want to be there with you."
"This is truly what I need. If you do this for me, we can still turn this day around."
"I knew you would, sir. I knew it."
Ediard was 100 yards from the end of Berthold Street. He could see the big open square surrounding Bice's mansion. Fountains still played in the pools, providing the only movement in the whole expanse. Behind them, the iron-bound gates in the high wall were swinging shut. He walked out into the square and looked up at the circular mansion. Over 100 people were standing along the top of the battlements on the external wall, As far as his farsight could tell, they were all armed. Every revolver was lined up on him. Behind them, the seven-story tower formed a proud silhouette against a sky stained by pyres of smoke. Its walls were a mottle of green and yellow, with each level a shade lighter than the last. The top floor was almost white. Bice stood on the roof, his splendid robes of office waving in the gentle wind. His long talk washed out, strong enough to reach over half the city.
"You have no authority here, Walter Walker. The district master has full dominion within his own walls. Leave this place."
Edyard was immensely tempted to reply with a single hand gesture. Instead he said, "Wait there, please. I have to deal with militia first." He turned his back on the mansion. A couple of shots were fired. He deflected the bullets easily. Heated orders flowed along the battlements, and nobody fired again. Edyard waited patiently, with the farsight of the entire city resting upon him. He felt ridiculously cocky, and rejoiced every second of the sensation.
Yeah, this is bold.
The militia regiment reached the end of Berthold Street and halted. The first three ranks took aim on the lone figure in the middle of the square, whose cloak hung around him with unnatural stillness. Fountains gurgled away merrily on either side of him.
"Captain LaRose," the Walter Walker said, "I'm glad it's you. You are a man of integrity."
The captain stepped forward and nodded courteously.
"As are you, Walter Walker. Would you please step aside so we may carry out our orders, as issued by the city's full legal authority?"
"What are those orders?"
"We are to arrest those malefactors hiding inside the district master's mansion."
"They are heavily armed."
"As are we."
"Yes, and I will not permit bloodshed on such a scale those orders would entail. Not in my city. I will deal with Bice and those he harbors. You have my word." Edyard turned full circle, his long talk growing stronger.
"Everyone has my word on that."
"Unfortunately, after today, your word is no longer enough," Captain LaRose said. "Stand aside, Walter Walker, or I will be forced to order my men to shoot you."
Edyard gave the captain a genuine smile.
"And how exactly are they going to do that from up there?" And he asked the city for its help.
"Up where?"
Captain LaRose suddenly gave the ground a nervous glance. He started to crouch in an attempt to regain what he perceived as his failing balance. It was a motion which pushed his polished boots firmly against the pavement, a motion which pushed him off the pavement. Behind him, 300 soldiers did exactly the same thing as their senses told them they were falling. 300 soldiers began to drift up gently into the air. They yelled in consternation and began windmilling their arms in panic. That only made it worse. They spun and twisted. Several of them bounced off the vine-clad walls of the buildings on either side of the street, which sent them tumbling through the main cluster of their frantic colleagues. Edyard stood perfectly still watching them. The noise of their combined shouting was colossal, and the mental panic flooding out was enough to make him wince. Most of the soldiers were 10 or 12 feet from the ground now, and still their limbs were clawing wildly at the air. He noticed that the majority were holding on to their revolvers, and shook his head in rueful disbelief.
"You should try and use your third hands to guide yourselves together," Edyard advised. "If you link up, you'll probably be more stable that way."
"Stop this!" Captain LaRose bawled.
He was turning lazily, his legs coming up parallel to the street below. Edyard held up his hands apologetically, as if mystified by what he was witnessing.
"I'm not doing anything."
LaRose's eyes bugged. He managed to bring his arm over and round, the revolver muzzle tracking down slowly towards Edyard.
"I really wouldn't do that if I were..."
LaRose fired. The powerful recoil force sent him cartwheeling fast back down Berthold Street. He careered into several of his men on the way, sending them spinning off. It wasn't good for their inner ears. Edyard pulled a face as the first soldier was spectacularly sick 15 feet above the pavement. Instead of splattering down, his vomit oscillated through the air, forming strange nebula shapes of its own. The horrified soldier next to him watched helplessly as he collided in slow motion. Then others started to spew up. The regiment's initial cries of shock changed in pitch to become wails of disgust. Edyard held up a finger in remonstration.
"Don't go away. I'll be back in a little while. We can talk about you holstering your weapons then."
He turned to face the mansion. This time nobody on the battlements took a pot shot at him. The entirety of Macathran was very quiet. The Water Walker looked up at the distant figure of District Master Bice.
You claim jurisdiction here, yet you forget that with power comes responsibility. You and your family have continually abused your position and allowed the gangs to spread throughout your district. You encourage defiance and manipulation of the law to your own ends. The result of this is the misery and deaths that we have witnessed today.
It is not me who brings...
Be silent!
Ediard aimed his right hand. A colossal bolt of lightning snapped out from his fingertip, striking the top of the tower roof a yard from where Bice was standing. Smoldering chunks of wall twirled out, falling to the courtyard far below. Bice cowered, his arms raised in front of his face.
You forget, Master Bice, that neither you nor the Grand Council is the final authority here. We are all guests of the city itself. Living here is not a right. It is a privilege. As of this day, the city revokes that right for you. The family Dirawal is hereby stripped of its position and wealth. Half of all its money will be redistributed as recompense among those of Sampaloc who have suffered this day. The remainder will go to the new master. I also add to that list of banishment all those who are named in the exclusion warrants. You will now leave Macathran and you will not return. Ever.
Not even you can force that upon us, Bice replied.
No, Ediard agreed equitably. I cannot. The city, however, can. And it will begin with the revocation of your mansion. For a long minute, Ediard and Bice stared at each other. Nothing seemed to happen. Laughter began among those on the wall's battlements. Catcalls and taunts rang out again. The giant iron-bound gates in front of Ediard emitted a staggeringly loud crack. People gasped and leaned over the battlements to see what was happening. The gates appeared to be intact. Bice's shielded mind suddenly flared with dismay. The edge of the roof where it curved to blend smoothly into the tower walls was changing. It loosened and fractured, turning to the finest dust, which then flowed as a liquid. Rivulets of the stuff dribbled down the wall towards the floor below. The rivulets grew to a deluge, swamping the delicate green and yellow patterns. Bice stared down as the accelerating tide began to rise over his boots.
If I were you, Ediard advised mildly, I'd come down while you still have stairs to come down on.
The gate sent out another agonized rasping. The sturdy hinge bolts, driven over 18 inches into the substance of the walls, were being rejected. The process, which always pushed out human fixings over time, was speeding up. From inside the mansion, a whole series of squeals and brassy groans could be heard, as every door was forced out of its frame. Pictures fell off the walls as the hanging spikes popped out. Shelves in the pantries and storerooms crashed to the floor, spilling their contents. Bice turned and ran for the stairwell. Water drained from the bathing pools on every floor in the mansion. The orange lighting segments dimmed to extinction. Crystal windows popped like soap bubbles. Doors fell, crashing down. Then the solid walls started to crawl as they slowly lost cohesion, transforming into a vertical tide of liquid dust. The family Dirawal and all their servants rushed for the stairs. G-chimps and monkeys and terrestrial cats raced past them, adding to the bedlam in the darkened stairwells. Bice had barely got halfway down to the sixth floor when the roof finally dissolved. Sunlight shone down into the exposed top-floor rooms, revealing the carpets and wobbling furniture being slowly engulfed by a cascade of dust. He moaned in terror and ran faster. Under his pounding feet, he could feel the surface of the curving, awkward stairs start to become slippery. One by one, the three gates in the outside wall slowly warped out of alignment as their fastenings finally came free. They pivoted with an unhurried grace and toppled down into the square. Nobody was left on the battlements to see their final moment. They were surging down the stairs in a desperate bid to reach the courtyard and safety. In total, it took over 30 minutes for the entire building to melt away. For it was a gigantic edifice, and not even the city could reabsorb its mass any quicker. During that time, the constable teams Ediard asked for arrived in the square and formed a circle 5 men deep around the vanishing mansion. Captain Ronark was among them. He saluted the Water Walker, as did the sergeants. They listened to his simple orders before organizing their men as he wanted. At the end, when the last stubs of the wall washed away, the area where the mansion had stood was reduced to a small lake of dust. It turned solid as rock. Piled on it was a mound of smashed furniture, and clothes and curtains and carpets and linen, books and bottles of wine, broken crockery, bent cutlery, or the glittery detritus that any incredibly wealthy family would accumulate over 2 millennia. Ranged around that were the survivors, sullen and resentful, but most of all fearful of the Water Walker and his power. They glowered as Ediard addressed them, but none dared to interrupt or argue. If you are a Dirwal, or one of those I named, you will hand over your weapons to the constables, he told them, and you will walk from here to the north gate. The constables will escort you and safeguard your passage. You may take with you whatever you can carry and no more. Everyone else is free to go. Captain Ronark headed the motley procession, square-shouldered and glowing with pride, taking them down Jankal Lane. I'll join you in a moment, Ediard told him, and walked over the square to Burfall Street. The regiment was still floating gently between the buildings. Several dozen had managed to cling to the vines, where they hung, trembling. No matter how hard they clutched their fronds, their stomachs still insisted they were falling. The air was filled with little globules of tacky fluid. Ediard wrinkled his nose as he approached. The smell was truly awful. His third hand drew Captain LaRose to the front of the falling zone the city had created for him. I don't have orders for you because I am not the mayor, Ediard said as he looked up at the miserable man in his appallingly stained uniform. However, I would like to suggest that the regiment help the victims of this day. Do you find that suggestion sensible, Captain?
Yes,
the captain whispered. Thank you. My pardon for any discomfort. Please, all of you, engage your safety catches. Nobody wants an accident now. The regiment sank slowly down to the ground. Ediard joined the line of constables on escort duty. The ones he fell in with were from Fieka Station. They welcomed him with muted smiles, trying not to appear too triumphal, but their thoughts were so bright it was hard to disguise. His farsight showed him Christabel arriving in Midpool. She was on a family gondola, with Asena, their old doctor. Behind her was a procession of 30 gondolas, each with a couple of doctors and several novices. The militia will be with you in a while, Ediard told her. They will help you aid the victims. Try and ignore the smell.
I am not sure I want their help, she replied tartly.
No recriminations, my love. We all have to live together after this.
Yes, of course.
Can you talk to your father for me? I'd like a ship loaded with food and blankets to sail north this afternoon. It can anchor just offshore and supply the exiles with enough to get them through the next few days. We can't just fling them out with nothing. There are children going with them.
There are times, Ediard, when it's really hard to live up to your standards of decency. But there isn't a day goes by when I don't thank the lady you have those standards. I'll talk to Daddy right away.
As Ediard and the Banished made their way across Sampaloc, small groups of constables guided other people to join them, the men who had exclusion warrants issued against them. Sometimes their wives and children were with them, sometimes they came alone. As they walked onwards, Ediard felt the continued intangible pressure of farsight pressing down on the morose column of unfortunates. He could feel the unconscious question brewing within the city's residents. What next? It was a question he was a little vague on himself. I need some advice, sir, he said to Finnerton.
I think all of us are redundant now, aren't we?
The Grand Master replied.
That's the thing. I can't be seen as some kind of emperor standing outside the council. All of us have to work within the framework of the law, otherwise it becomes an irrelevance, and people can't live without the order it brings. That's what today was about, restoring order. We can't lose now. People have died.
I know. Even until the last minute I thought Owen would pull back. If you are willing to accept the constraints of the law, then it should be possible to start afresh. Not that it will be easy. However, once people have time to reflect, and with some encouragement, they should be able to see that you are acting for the best. We just have to have a strategy that can take us up to the election. That is when you and I both will face the ultimate judgment.
I know that. I have some ideas.
Very well, my boy. Let's hear them.
Cansine, Dinlay, and Maxon were on the Cloud Canal Bridge, sitting together on one of its twisty pillars. They'd spread their jackets on the next pillar to dry in the bright sunlight. Cansine's wet hair clung to her scalp like a bad beret. Her knuckles were grazed and muddy. Dinlay was trying to clean the one intact lens left in his glasses. Not that it mattered much. One eye was so badly swollen he could barely see through it. His lip was split and still dribbling blood.
He'd taken his boots off, so that his left ankle could be bound in a thick bandage. Maxon's nose was broken. Two small wads of tissue were jammed up each nostril, scarlet with blood. His jacket was missing, and his shirt under the draw silk waistcoat was ripped, revealing a lot of scratches and bruises on his arms. They didn't get up as Ediard approached. They just sat there watching him in silence. He stopped in front of them. "Don't tell me," he said. "I should see the other fellows." Kansine sneered. "If there was anything left of them." "You stood by me," he told them. "You believed in me. You took on Eustace's idiots so I could get through." Maxon turned to Dinlay and grinned. "Eustace's idiots. Good name for that platoon." "We can probably get it made official," Dinlay conceded. He eased himself off the short pillar, wincing at the movement as he put some weight on his sprained ankle. "Come here." Ediard embraced him, unbelievably happy that no harm had befallen his surviving friends. Well, nothing permanent. Then Kansine stepped into his outheld arms. Finally, Maxon gave him a hug.
"Ouch!"
"You all right?" Ediard asked anxiously. "He might be a complete tit." Maxon's index finger probed his nose gingerly. "But he knows how to fight Dutty, I'll give him that." "So," Dinlay said, "we get to stay constables." Ediard gave Maxon and Kansine a mildly guilty look. "For the moment, yes. You going to help me with this escort duty?" Dinlay gave his bandaged ankle an annoyed look. "I don't think I can make it all the way to North Gate." "The doctors will be here soon," Ediard assured him. "How about you two?"
"Bloody hoonious. It's all go with you, isn't it?"
The march over High Moat was swift enough. By the time Ronark reached North Gate, Ediard counted nearly 800 people in the column. He hated that so many women and children were being taken along, but there was nothing he could do about that. Not now. It was always going to be like this. The road on both sides of the giant gate was deserted. Ediard and the constables stopped at the crystal wall. Bice, who was at the head of the column, paused at the giant archway through the wall. "A ship will anchor in Corley Cove this evening," Ediard told the ex-district master. "It has provisions for you. All of you." Bice glared at him.
"Where are we supposed to go?"
"There are fresh lands in the provinces. You can begin again if you wish."
"I am a district master!"
Bice yelled furiously. Over 50 members of the Dirawal family were gathered behind him, all of them wearing clothes appropriate to their status, and completely wrong to be wearing for a march through the countryside. Hems on the fanciful skirts of the older women were already ragged and filthy as they dragged along High Moat's dusty track. The men were carrying their fur-lined robes and sweating in their gaudy shirts and trousers. Two of the younger wives were carrying crying babes. Not one of them had footwear that would last more than a couple of days on the road. Ediard did his best not to feel guilt or sorrow at the misery arrayed in front of him. "If you had lived up to your responsibilities, you still would be," he said. "Now leave while I'm still feeling generous."
"You won't live past midnight," Bice spat.
Ediard smiled without humor. "I hope you're not relying on Warpal or Motluck to make that a reality." Bice paled. He glanced up at the archway and marched through with his head held high. His family trudged after him.
"He'll be in some frenzy guru pavilion by nightfall," Captain Ronark declared, "dressed in fresh clothes, sipping wine, and plotting revenge while the rest of these unfortunates are shivering on the side of the road."
"I know," Ediard said as those named on the exclusion warrants began to file past, calling names and swearing vengeance. "The important thing is the banishment itself. Without the most active gang members, we can achieve order in the city. Besides, how long do you think Bice will be welcome in that pavilion? A fortnight? A month? How long would you feed and clothe his whole family? He'll be moved on eventually, further and further away from us."
"I hope so."
"Thank you for your support, sir," Ediard said.
"You would have it 1,000 times over, Water Walker. I've given my life to the constables and achieved so little. You have restored the city's faith in us, in the law. That means a lot to me, and probably to more people than you realize.
I was hoping you could talk to Walsfoll for me."
"I will have words. It might be easier than you expect. The mayor's actions today left a lot of people shocked and disturbed.
I need to remain a constable."
"There's a position that I believe would serve very well."
What position?
Captain of Jeevan Station.
Edyard gave the old man a startled look.
But, sir...
I'm almost at retirement age anyway, and there are posts in the Chief Constable's office where I can sit out my time. Look at me. I'm here watching the worst bastards in the city march into banishment. People I've spent decades trying to stop. It doesn't get better than this. You taking charge of Jeevans is fitting, and it will put you in a good position to achieve Chief Constable in a few years. Walsfall is my age, you know.
That is enormously generous, sir.
It's good politics, and I think you've learned what's most important in this city now.
Yes, sir.
Eight constables escorted Boate to the north gate. Edyard gave the man a dismissive glance and told the constables to let him go.
I don't know what you are, Water Walker, Boate said, but you'll never last.
You're probably right, but while I'm here, you're not, and that gives everyone a chance at a better life. Boate turned away and walked through the north gate.
Now that's a sight I never thought I'd see, Cancine said,
as Boate gave the grassland outside a disgusted look. He strode away, keeping himself apart from the other exiles tramping along.
Worth remembering, though, Maxon said. So what's next, mighty Water Walker?
Sampaloc, and then a wedding, Edyard told them, and if you ever call me that again, you'll find yourself living with Boate in a hut in the furthest province I can find.
Oho, touché!
What do you mean a wedding? Cancine asked.
I need to talk to you...
Edyard broke off. His arm suddenly shot out, pointing at the last few stragglers in the column going out Northgate.
Not you!
He beckoned.
Come here!
The teenage lad gave a guilty start, looking round to try and see who the Water Walker was pointing at.
Yes, you,
Edyard said. The lad certainly looked like he should be exiled. Curly brown hair that hadn't seen soap for weeks, a scratchy beard just starting, bad outbreak of spots on both cheeks. His clothes were clearly tailored for someone else, with a belt holding up trousers whose legs were crudely cut to size because he wasn't particularly tall for his age. He wore a patched jacket with bulging pockets, filled with food and some small silver items looted from Sampaloc's shops. His only expression was sullen, and he wouldn't meet anyone's gaze. His parents came with him, clinging defensively. Edyard remembered the father, a gang member working rackets out of Abad.
What's your name? Edyard asked.
You leave him alone, the woman cried. We're going. What more do you bastards want from us?
The lad gave Edyard the kind of surly stare that only a Sampaloc youth could manage.
What do they call you? He asked benignly.
Markol. What's it to you?
And your father is Arcton, I know. And your mother?
Janiel, she said uncertainly. What is this?
Markol here has a very strong third hand.
Markol reddened. I don't!
There aren't many in this city who can pull a G-Eagle out of the sky from such a height.
Wasn't me.
You're loyal to your parents, aren't you? Edyard mused. You have to be if you're leaving with them. You're old enough to stay and look after yourself if you really want. After all, you're not named in any warrant.
You let him be,
Janiel said. Her arms went protectively round her son.
I ain't staying here,
Markol said defiantly. I'll make you an offer, Edyard said. I'll cancel your father's banishment if you sign on as a probationary constable at Jeevan's station.
What?
Arcton and Janiel gave each other a disbelieving look.
Edyard?
A puzzled Cancine queried.
Two conditions, Edyard said.
Markol has to complete his probation and graduate, and you, Arcton, get a job and keep out of trouble.
Are you serious? Arcton asked.
I'm the Water Walker.
He doesn't do funny, Maxon informed them curtly.
Yes, Janiel said.
She looked ready to burst into tears.
Yes, we'll do it.
Markol? Edyard asked.
What do you say?
It won't be easy.
Why are you doing this?
It was more a grunt than a sentence. Edyard put his arm round Markol's shoulder and drew him aside. Have you got a girlfriend?
Yeah, hundreds.
Hundreds, eh? You're lucky. I didn't, not before I joined the constables. Do you know how many I had after I became the Water Walker? Did you hear about that part of my life? Markol came perilously close to smiling.
Sort of.
Girls, especially fancy family girls, like men in uniform, particularly those of us who are stronger than everyone else. They really like that.
Yeah?
It's never easy being a probationary constable, but can it be harder than trying to be a farm boy on the other side of the Uguru? Is that what you want to be?
No.
So will you give it a try? For your mum's sake, if nothing else. Look at her. She doesn't want to be thrown out of the city. But I don't have a choice. Your dad did wrong. Except now you've got a chance to put it all right.
Okay.
I'll do it. Thank you. Ediard turned to Arkden and Janiel. You can go home. Have him at Jeevan Station, 7 o'clock tomorrow morning, washed and looking respectable.
Yes, Water Walker. Thank you, Water Walker.
What in Hunius was that about? Maxon asked. You can't seriously think he'll make a constable. Ediard grinned. We did. The last of the banished walked through Northgate. Ediard turned to address the big crowd of constables who had completed the escort duty. People will remember this day because of what I did. But none of that would be possible without your support. And I thank you from the bottom of my heart for the way you stood by me today. You made this happen just as much as me. His third hand reached for the giant iron hinges which held the gate itself. The latching mechanism creaked in protest as he lifted it. A flurry of rust flakes snowed down onto the grass from the cumbersome mechanism. Then he pulled the gate itself. The constable started cheering as the huge section of crystal swung back into the hole which Ra himself had cut it out of 2,000 years ago. It made such a crunching noise that Ediard thought the ancient crystal might finally shatter. But instead, it fitted the archway perfectly. He thought such a dramatic gesture was an apt way to finish the banishment. Kathleen, Kansine's sister, was standing in the square next to the pile of wreckage which had been the Dirawal family's possessions. She was holding little Dayum in her arms. He was sucking on a honey ball and squirming round energetically. Dibal and Bijuli were standing beside her, all three of them talking to Dinley, who was sitting on a battered old pew of Talcherry wood salvaged from the pile. A lot of Sampaloc residents were busy salvaging. They swarmed over the mound like dragon on carrion. People were carrying off heavy bundles of stuff down the roads from the square. Ediard thought at least a third of it had been taken already. Incredibly, that included one of the huge gates from the outer wall. A quick scan round with his farsight revealed the gate beside a smithy 3 streets away. The owner and his apprentices were already hammering at the big iron bindings.
Right,
Kansine snapped as they emerged from Burfall Street and she saw Kathleen. What's going on? Kathleen caught sight of them and waved happily. Ediard held up a finger in pleading. One moment. The Sampaloc residents had stopped everything as the Water Walker returned to the square, giving him nervous glances. He smiled at them. Take whatever you want, please. Then stand back. Several of the bolder ones took him at his word and continued to pick through the remains.
Ediard?
Kansine warned.
Ah, here we go.
Ediard had spied Christabel emerging from one of the streets. She was wearing a lime green dress and an apron with smears of blood on it. A mother was walking beside her, an elderly woman stiff with suspicion. She presided over the ladies' church in Sampaloc, one of the most thankless tasks in the district. It showed in her demeanor. She was a lot tougher than most of the ladies' mothers Ediard had encountered. Bijuli embraced Maxon, while Dibal clapped him on the back. Maxon yelped at the impact. Kansine had now been saddled with the wiggling Dayum, who was delighted to see his auntie. Christabel gave Ediard a quick kiss.
Are you all right?
Yeah, but I really don't want any more days like this one.
There won't be.
Still want to marry me?
Of course. Is that what this is about?
She gestured at the mother.
No, sorry. This is about maintaining the rule of law. That's what gives people hope, and they need that today, of all days.
I love you, she murmured. The mother coughed for attention.
You asked to see me, Water Walker?
Yes, mother. I think we might have a ceremony for you to perform.
What kind of ceremony?
Maxon, I believe our dearest friend told you not to waste any time.
What?
Dibal started chuckling. Do you have something to ask somebody? Ediard said levelly. Right now.
Maxon gave him a frantic stare. You've got to be joking, he growled through lips which didn't move.
I'm the water walker. Apparently I don't do funny. The salvagers had claimed their prizes. Now they were gathering to watch the latest bizarre spectacle to be played out in the square today. Constables also began to congregate, showing considerable interest. A lot of farsight was concentrating on the square again. Ediard held out an arm. A silver ring flashed out from the pile of debris to fly across the square into his hand. He proffered it to Maxon with a flourish. You might need this.
Oh, lady.
Maxon took the ring, his eyes widening in amazement at how many diamonds could fit onto such a small item.
Really?
Really, Ediard said. Maxon took a breath and went down on one knee.
Cansine, I have never been happier than when I'm with you. Would you please do me the honor of marrying me?
He might have been incredibly awkward with so many people straining to see and hear, but his face held a longing that was irrefutable.
Yes, my darling, she said. I will marry you.
Several constables whistled and clapped in approval as Maxon put the ring on her finger. He frowned at Ediard as it slipped about.
You couldn't find one that fitted.
Mother, Ediard said, would you please marry them now?
Ediard, no, Cansine said. Look at the state of me. My wedding is supposed to be... Not this.
I'm sorry, he said. I have my reason.
Your reason?
He nodded.
It better be incredible, she muttered.
Dybal gave the bride away. Dinlay was best man. Kathleen stood behind her sister, crying as she held the posy of flowers hurriedly snatched from plants in nearby streets. Christabel and Bijouli took it in turns to cope with Dayum, who really wanted to be in on the action. Ediard held Christabel's hand when he could, listening to the mother's words with the heap of rubbish from the mansion as the background to the damp, disheveled bride and groom. Constables formed a big semicircle round them, with curious Sampaloc residents making up a wider audience. When it was over, when the promises were made, the rings exchanged and the bride kissed, Ediard went up to his friends. His voice and long talk filled the square. When Ra brought us out of the chaos to this place, the city accepted us. When Ra allowed his most faithful friends and followers to become district masters, the city did not object, for he chose wisely. Down the centuries, the family Dirawal slipped away from the ideals that were sworn at the beginning, and today is a result of that. None of us wish to defy Ra's constitution, least of all me. So I now publicly ask this city to accept the appointment of the new joint district master and mistress of Sampaloc.
Ediard!
Cansine hissed furiously. The water walker gestured, and the ground beneath the pile of expensive detritus turned fluid again. Everything left from the demise of Bice's mansion was sucked down below the surface amid a harsh, gurgling sound. The crowd drew a sharp breath of excitement. Walk to the middle, Ediard said quietly as the city substance hardened again. Maxon took his wife's hand and urged her out into the big open space. Both of them radiated nerves as their soggy boots squelched on the ground, watched by over 1,000 people in the square, and many times that number by farsight. The new master and mistress of Sampaloc, Ediard announced, and their new mansion. The surface began to ripple around Maxon and Cansine. She jumped in apprehension as he hugged her tight, which gathered more than a little appreciation from their audience. 6 long dark lines firmed up on the ground around them, as if some architect was using the area to sketch an enormous hexagon. Smaller lines multiplied inside them, revealing the outlines of various rooms and cloisters. Then all the lines began to bulge up into ridges. A radiantly happy Cansine glanced across the empty space to Ediard.
How long is this going to take?
A little while. It's always quicker and easier to tear things down than it is to build them back up again.
So, a week?
Ediard gave the tiny ridges a doubtful look. After 5 minutes they were nearly 2 inches high. Below them the city was ponderously rearranging its vast, complicated network of channels and ducts to feed and support the new structure he'd hurriedly drafted. A building with proper stairs. Finally. Perhaps I'd better get you a tent as your wedding present.
This is the end of the CD.
The audiobook continues on the next CD.